Shelly Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
September 22, 2022. Allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. Anyway, this is the O'Shelly Effect, and we are broadcasting live as I speak just after 8 p.m. Eastern here on a Thursday. So, yeah, September 22, 2022, and all that good stuff. Still without the services of Larry Hancock, but I believe that's going to change very, very soon. So, no second hour broadcast planned today. Anyway, the first hour, good enough, believe me, because we're going to get into some serious issues here and have to go over the news. So don't worry, it's not going to be all about YouTube this week, okay? It's just not. Mike Swanson, WallStreetWindow.com. Of course, be in the know, go to WallStreetWindow.com. It is changing a bit over there, and believe me, there's a lot more news you can gather from WallStreetWindow.com. You go over there, but he's also the author of The War State, highly recommended book by me anyway, and also others, if you check it out. It's been out a while, but still worth reading, and if you haven't read it, I don't know what to tell you. You need to. And the Why the Vietnam War, okay, which is the first in a series of three that are planned regarding that particular conflict. He is the author of both of those things, and just a super individual to have on to have discussions with. Mike Swanson, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I tell you, it's been a weird week, Mike. Every week is a weird week anymore, but let's get into a couple of strange things really fast. And I don't want to sit and talk to you about the markets too much, but I feel as though I got to mention it. You know, the Federal Reserve and of course, local news here does this thing now. We're going to verify whether people are correct about certain things or not. And they come up with some question that they allegedly harvest from local viewers, right? And the question on last night's broadcast, I think it was because I was looking at it, you know, I get a little confused because I don't watch these things live, but I do check them out on YouTube afterwards. And the big question was, can the Federal Reserve only raise rates a certain amount of time in a year? Because some people were saying, apparently online somewhere, that they can't continuously raise rates. And I knew that was wrong, you know, off the bat, but I wanted to see what their little fact checkers had to say. Of course they can. The housing situation, as we've discussed on this show, is getting weird. In my particular city, you know, people are not doing so well, although the governor is issuing, you know, if you're somebody who's poor enough, you're getting a check from a budget surplus in the state of Georgia, okay? And all that. That's not an attempt to buy votes or anything, is it? You know, I'm just saying, you know, I'm just going to give every poor person a check. Oh, by the way, you know, in less than 2 months, there's going to be an election. But pay no attention to that. I'm just the governor doing this for you because I'm a good guy. You know, that's happening. We're all getting squeezed here as per usual. You know, it is what it is. But I got to say, nationally, it seems like, you know, inflation continues to grip everybody. The housing market is doing weird little topsy-turvy things, and the stock market is tumbling a bit. Now, am I wrong about this? Because I even saw reports that gold has come down a bit in price, which none of this actually makes sense in normal economic terms. Just really quickly, because I want to get on to some other interesting things in the news with you. But really quickly, I mean, what's your thoughts? Are we in kind of an undeclared sort of recession, and is it going to get worse before the end of the year, just after the end of the year? Are they going to wait for the selection process to be done in November to really buckle us all down into our buckles, or what?
Well, the Federal Reserve just Wednesday of last week, they raised interest rates 75 points, and they said they're going to continue to raise them through the end of this year and into next year. to stop inflation. The problem is interest rates went to zero, and they are lower than the inflation rate, the official inflation rate. And that fact is inflationary. Like we spoke of last week, right. When rates are low, there are people that go out and they buy homes because it's cheap to finance the debt, and that helps drive housing prices up. But then when rates go up, you know, it becomes more expensive to do that. So that slows down the housing market. And the same basic sort of thing happens with credit card debt, with businesses, anyone who's borrowing money. So right. The fact that they're pledging to raise interest rates, it's going to continue to slow down the economy. Now, what they also said is that once they stop raising rates, and they predicted that they would raise them up to 4.5 on the official Fed funds rate, but mm-hmm. once they stop, they then said they don't want to lower them until 2024. And a lot of people in the stock market and people that talk about it have been hopeful that they would actually be lowering rates next year because that would help the stock market go up. Mm-hmm. And that's what they wanted to believe. And to make it simple of when it comes to the financial markets, we're in a bear market.
Right.
And have been in one since the beginning of the year. We talked about that. But bear markets typically have three phases to them. And the first phase is one where the people that are trading, investing, the commentators deny it. They know it's going down, but they think it's just a correction. 'Cause we've seen many corrections since 2009. Where the market would fall 20% and then, you know, go up and be okay. And in 2020, it did crash, but it did come back much, you know, very quickly. So everyone, 90% of the people, were saying, oh, it'll just come back. So it'll be like it was. Don't worry about it. And the Fed, you know, they'll cut rates. They'll help us because they have always done that before. Now, the second phase, when it comes to the stock market, has just begun. Really last week, perhaps. The market fell more, the Fed made these statements, and a few weeks before that, there were inflation numbers that were really terrible that showed that the inflation is simply much more than rising energy prices, but it's gone into food, healthcare, rent, you know, everyone pretty much knows that, but right. A lot of the stock market people, they were trying to say it's just oil and oil will come down and be all right. Well, that number proved them wrong. And then, what the Fed did again showed that their scenario that we're not going back to the way it was, in the years previous. So we're in the second phase, which for stock market investors, and this doesn't mean if it's a person on television talking about it or someone that's got a retirement account and believes they don't know anything, the psychological feeling is the same. And that is, it is bad. It is a bear market. I'm losing money, but I'm going to ride it out. And a lot of people will accomplish doing that, but a good number of people won't. And that's when the third phase happens, and that's panic selling and a washout. And there'll be people that are in the market now who go bankrupt because they're on margin, they're doing wild speculations, and they're crazy, and they'll bankrupt themselves.
Right.
And there'll be other people, though, that they sell out because they can't. They'll lose enough money that they'll say, I can't lose anymore. I don't want to lose anymore. And they'll sell out and walk away from it forever. And that's what will happen in the third phase, but I don't really think that's going to happen until next year.
Sounds like the five stages of grief, just without anger and acceptance.
It is.
It's just, there's no acceptance, though. It never gets to acceptance because I think the cycle just repeats itself. So, you know, you never get to any sort of finality in grief, do you?
No, and I'll tell you, I mean, this is not just the regular person with the retirement account, but the talking heads. I mean, I just give you an example today on Twitter. Jim Cramer, you know, probably the most famous stock market guru on television.
Right.
He made two tweets, one at 10 o'clock in the morning. Tech is as bad as I have ever seen it. Maybe worse. He's talking about, you know, technology stocks.
Right.
It's as bad as he's ever seen it. Well, that's, you know, and then 4 hours later, he says this: tech may have no mojo, but we are really oversold, so it may not be as easy to roll this market down. It's exactly what I'm describing. He knows it's bad,
right?
But he's telling people to ride it out.
Well, yeah, because what good does it do him to say, get the hell out of this mess, because, you know, it's just a, I know, look, it's a repeating, it's a cycle.
We've seen this, seen it two other times, and I've been someone that lost money once in one of these things too, so.
Well, I hate to laugh,
I know how it feels to be one of these people.
Right. Unfortunately, right? I mean, but that's the thing. In light of that, though, right? You know, what do they keep telling us about this? Well, of course, they bring up, well, there's all these problems with grain coming out of Ukraine because blah, blah, blah. And of course, what does that take us to? I was a bit taken aback by the recent performances at the, UN. I don't know about you, but I mean, you know, I see Biden in his talk and it was, fairly bellicose for him. But also they allowed Zelensky to, pipe his way in, I don't know, via Zoom or something, in order to give a presentation. So we have the international concern. What's going on with Russia? Again, the saber rattling regarding, will there be the possibility of the use of nukes, right? We're seeing that speculated about. We're seeing the analysts in that corner of the world that, you know, deal with international diplomacy and lack thereof, talking about the possibilities, what Russia might be doing, the calling up of, more citizens, supposedly. They said mobilizing. I hate them even using that term, because mobilization to me is different from what is allegedly being done in Russia at the moment in response to, supposedly, the, Ukrainian situation. And what's happening regarding NATO and its actions. Did you happen to catch the speeches at the UN with Biden and Zelensky?
I did not, but I just want to, I'm curious to see what they said, but I just want to make one point, and that is, you know, me and you know a lot about the Kennedy administration or that era, and 1960, the Cuban Missile Crisis is real famous, but that was in 1962.
Right.
But in the summer of 1961, there was a Berlin crisis.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, that was a dangerous crisis too. And Khrushchev was making threats to, it was all about Berlin, and he was threatening to seal it off so the West couldn't get in there. This was all resolved by the building of the Berlin Wall.
Right.
But for that summer, there was war talk, and Khrushchev gave a speech on television in which he wore a military suit. I think it may have been the one he wore during World War II.
Okay.
But this was a real bellicose speech. But he did not call or do a mobilization. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time, you know, the Russian leader has done I would say it's a limited mobilization is what he's actually doing,
right,
calling up, he says 300,000 people, and I want to read something about that in a second, but I'm just trying to suggest that this is a serious situation, you know. I mean, it's a war, you know, in Ukraine, you know, as you've had one guest on describe what it's like to, what he's lived through, you know.
Yeah, a couple of them, but, you know, the thing is, it's not even necessarily about the conflict in the one nation state, but the idea that something like this can do what, right? Lead us to a much wider conflict where there's more places involved and there's more engagement involved, more nations have to become involved out of self-preservation, etc. And, of course, the Berlin crisis had been preceded by a lot of problems with communication with the military and stuff like that where... You know, there was this thing going on between East and West Germany, okay? And I know the Berlin Wall's gone now, but it stood quite a while for a reason. And, you know, with this situation with Russia, we don't have necessarily that, you know, shadowing each other over the, you know, different sides of a fence. But in a way, we do because of what's happening. And the idea that there's this, you know... more threatening sort of statements, regarding, you know, listen, we can take this wider, we can make this worse, we're gonna bring in more people. I mean, you know, this is, I don't wanna seem alarmist, but this does lend itself to a bigger problem that could emerge. And economically, of course, people are talking about, well, you know, because of the energy and the, different sanctions that are against Russia, this means XYZ and all this. And by the time you're done, your head is spinning. You don't know exactly what they're saying, but you do know that if something really does light off, if something becomes a lot more of a hot conflict as opposed to a cold conflict, of course, it's not lukewarm in Ukraine, but elsewhere it is. You know, this could easily turn into something else. And it seems to me like, I don't know, when you've got two sides making statements like this on the international stage, you know, it's either for a purpose or it is for the purpose that's being advertised, one or the other, and it's sometimes hard to know which is which. You know, are we looking at posturing here or are we looking at the possibility of a real conflict is the question I keep asking myself as I observe this. How do you feel about it?
Well, it's very disturbing. You know, this is in my view. I mean, the worst, the risks of the usage of nuclear weapons are the biggest they've been, perhaps in our lifetime, greater since 1962. The only other time. Yeah, I mean, the only other crisis that I know of were, was an accidental use. Right. And I think it was 1982 where, the tensions between the Soviet Union and the U.S. were big enough that the Soviets feared we were going to attack them and they were on high alert and, their computers told them that we were that there was like one missile coming at them, and they the person manning that station looking at it just ignored it. But you know, so to me this is I mean, I don't know of a worse situation than we're in at the moment. That doesn't mean it's but at the same time I don't think people really understand it, or how bad it is. I mean, I'm somebody that's read the transcripts of the Cuban Missile Crisis and other events before that, or talk among military leaders in the United States. And at that time, when Kennedy was president, some of them were very willing to use nuclear weapons.
Well, they had beliefs that they could literally win. A nuclear exchange, you know, and some of them were stating that what we needed to do was to strike first, and that would be, and that attitude, I mean, as per usual, right? I mean, your enemy always gets to know some intelligence, you know, from outside. Now, they may not get all of the conversation or all the context, But if they get hints like that, where there are people that are in power, that are in positions of authority and influence, that might be thinking this way, well, you have to logically respond to it. And it goes both ways. You know, are we entering a time now where there are people thinking it might be better to head off the Russian bear now, as opposed to...
On that note, you know, the one of the reasons why it's disturbing is, I mean, obviously what Putin said the other day, but in the Wall Street Journal a month or two ago, there was an editorial by somebody that's a pretty, I can't remember who exactly it was, but they're a pretty notable foreign policy writer.
Right.
And they were basically saying that, I mean, this is in the Wall Street Journal. They're basically saying he may use a tactical nuclear weapon, and we shouldn't be afraid of it, and not be willing to just attack him with our nuclear weapons. I mean, that's just pretty crazy, you know. But it's right there in that newspaper.
Yeah, well, it sounds like something that we were supposed to imagine could never happen, because that would be right. You know, the whole concept of a mutually assured destructive deterrent. Right. It was the idea that, you know, we have these weapons, so therefore would make it so that nobody would be interested in having an exchange.
Well, one thing about that, and I, you know, when I wrote that Vietnam War book, when I was writing the conclusion, I read some Air Force histories about nuclear weapons policy. And when starting around 1956 to 19, it started to change in 1963, but there are people in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. People think of mutually assured destruction, but for a couple years, from about 56 to 63, there are a lot of people, actually it was almost official Air Force doctrine that they could win a nuclear war. Mm-hmm. And what they meant by that wasn't shooting all, I mean, there's the meeting of Kennedy where they present him this thing about shooting everything off. But there is also a view that they could use them in one country, in one, you know, local conflict, like against China or Vietnam or something. Mm-hmm. And because we had such overwhelming superiority, we had, you know, until 1961, the Russians only had like, they could only strike England and Western Europe with missiles. And it wasn't until 1961 that they had four that could reach the United States, and they're all in the same launch pad. So, and China didn't have any. So we had such an advantage that they could imagine us using them and they would just like surrender. And I think that's what, In the Cuban Missile Crisis, I think that's what they were thinking. I read over the famous meeting where Kennedy is talking to LeMay, and you know, everyone looks, you know, LeMay basically calls him a coward. He calls him an appeaser. Mm-hmm. This is worse than Munich or something, or this is like Munich or something. He says something like that.
Right.
But after he says that, General Maxwell Taylor, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he says that they can have the Russians, I don't have it right in front of me, but something like boxed in, on the run, something like that, if they attack Cuba. So he was, you know, LeMay speaks so crude, but in that, Taylor was basically saying, in better words, what LeMay, you know, what the idea was of how they could win. It wasn't, let's just nuke the entire world, but we'd attack Cuba and they won't do anything. I don't believe that's what would have happened. But, McNamara did not believe in this. And I don't believe everyone in the military did either. And McNamara did not want this to happen. And he worked to change to make it so the official doctrine he switched the targeting from we could target their nuclear missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And then theoretically, by now, by 62, they are building more. You know, they have more that could reach us. But he changed the targeting, you know, what we would hit, from targeting their nuclear missiles to targeting their cities.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that to make it so we really couldn't win. And he basically creating it so it was a mutually assured destruction doctrine. And then the Dr. Strangelove movie comes out.
Yeah.
I think in 65 at the latest. And this becomes what everyone, you know, by the time that movie comes out, that is the official, that's the war plan. That's what it is, really mutual assured destruction.
Right.
And the movie, you know, kind of puts it all out there. And that's what, you know, everyone thinks of nuclear war, but me growing up, and I believe everybody, that's what we thought nuclear war always was.
Well, between 2000 and 2003, McNamara did some academic presentations where he explains a lot of this from his point of view, obviously, and many years later, to people that are studying this, and specifically to explain how the doctrine was changed and why. And I only know this because I saw one at NYU back then. But it's very interesting what you're bringing up here. But today, I don't know if anybody publicly is really aware of what the official doctrine is of the U.S. government. I mean, do you disagree with me there? Do you think that's being advertised somewhere? Because
No, I don't think it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, from what I read at the beginning of the war, mm-hmm. you know, the time period of the Cold War and the Kennedy, I don't know what their doctrine, the Soviet doctrine was after Kennedy was president,
mm-hmm.
but for what I've read about up till then, they really didn't have a doctrine except, right. you know, we just use them if we're attacked. They had no plan to win with them or anything. It's just, you know, we're running all these scenarios, the Rand Corporation, all this mathematical mumbo jumbo, and they didn't do any of that. They're just like, we just use them if we need to.
Right.
but supposedly, I mean, at the start of the Ukraine war, I was reading stuff claiming that they have a doctrine that they would use a tactical nuclear weapon. The phrase is escalate to de-escalate.
Mm-hmm.
So Putin would use a tactical weapon to create a crisis to force negotiations, basically. That's supposedly the official doctrine that the Russians have. Now, our doctrine, I don't really know what it is today.
Right, that's my point, is that, you know, publicly we could talk about the historical ideas that were developed, you know, in the 1960s specifically, but that certainly changed during the time that Reagan was in office. I guarantee you it wasn't the same policy, and I have no clue today what it looks like, honestly. You know, I just know that we still have these things. We never got rid of them. Despite all the different treaties, you know, we're not supposed to do this, we're not supposed to do that. I suspect that we did not adhere to every treaty, and now we've walked away from a few or not re-signed on to certain things, right? I mean, there is all kinds of stuff that has gone on here, and I don't think anybody knows really what the reaction would be based on the policy. And of course, you know, a given administration and given controllers at the time could do things their own way, but point is that when we're entering a time where this becomes a real world possibility, I think that it would be difficult to map out specifically if there is any sort of a preset idea of which way the U.S. would respond, or even what it is that the Kremlin would be after. I know it's not the Soviet Union anymore, but is it possible that we even have enough intelligence to know what they would be, you know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, I think there's a lot of unknowns here, which makes it even more nerve-wracking for you and me. And at the same time, I would feel as though if they wanted to assuage the public's worries about this, they wouldn't be having people that were former, like Samantha Powers is out there, and, you know, she's a former Obama advisor and things like that. I think they wouldn't have people like her out there lending credence to the idea that we are in a precarious and dangerous circumstance regarding this at this time, if it was not in some way a realistic possibility. But I'm going to continue. I'm going to continue talking to Mike Swanson about this, throughout the rest of the hour. We're going to take a quick break here on this Thursday. And, we're talking nukes and Russia and what direction is this all heading in on the Ocelli Effect. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilan from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles started to really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away.
Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination looked into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon. Why? The Vietnam War by author Mike Swanson.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
The second segment of the Thursday Ocelli Effect is live now. If you're hearing us just a little after 8:30 p.m. Eastern, I am live with Mike Swanson, of course, the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com, the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War. You just heard a commercial, I think, for each of those during the break. But if not, I'm sure you've heard it if you've listened to the network. I recommend both of those books highly, and be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. Mike, we were talking about Russia and the current idea that nuclear weapons could be in play and all that, supposedly and allegedly suggested repeatedly now by Vladimir Putin, but we have no idea what the current policy is regarding this when it comes to what our side of the equation allegedly. Now, I talked a little bit about the UN and fairly aggressive sounding language out of Biden. And yet they're walking back all kinds of statements that he made on 60 Minutes recently. And, you know, he also said the pandemic was over, Mike. I don't know if you caught that one. Yeah, I don't know what to make of Biden and his statements at this point. What do they mean? Especially when he gets to the consequences part. You know, truth or dare, truth or consequence, right? When he gets to the consequences part of the presentation, it gets a little wonky. It doesn't quite get specific repeatedly. So, anyway, I didn't watch the 60 Minutes thing, but I do know that they've been trying to walk back all kinds of things. I know you're not going to comment on the pandemic issue, but that to me sounded strange when he said, hey, it's over. And meanwhile, how are you going to keep pushing legislation about that? But there were other things involved in that discussion on 60 Minutes recently, wasn't there?
Well, I did watch that, and when it came to Russia, he did say there's going to be all these consequences. If they asked him what would happen if he uses a tactical nuclear weapon, Putin, and he just basically said there'll be all these consequences. I mean, when I saw it, it sounded to me like he would not, by us, the United States, would not use nuclear weapons. But I have no clue what these consequences would be. Just what we would do. I don't, you know, at that point, what else can we do? I mean, we're giving these people all these weapons in Ukraine, giving, you know, Ukraine all these weapons, all these sanctions. I don't know what else we could really do beyond what we're doing other than, I mean, what else is there, you know? I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, there is boots on the ground, but if that's ever suggested, right, that's not a realistic part of the equation, or that's not going to happen. And when Biden is confronted with that directly, he always shoots it down, right? Or he always has.
Let me. The other thing about the usage, when would the United States use nuclear weapons? Really, the stuff I was talking about when it came to the Cuban Missile Crisis and this idea that we could win a nuclear war,
right.
That was all inside the government. You know, the public didn't have no idea. Really, I don't know when we knew that these ideas were out there. I didn't know them when I was in college, and I had professors that took this stuff. My dad was in the military pretty high up. You know, it's just stuff that we've learned from files and more classification.
Yeah, he might have known, but then again, these guys were all directing the public to do what? You know, duck and cover, build a shelter.
But the thing is, officially, there was a doctrine of when NATO used nuclear weapons.
Right.
And that was if the United States troops are attacked, that's when we would use them. And that was like that wasn't the official doctrine and all the way up to the end of the Cold War. In other words, it was a defensive use. The tripwire was if the Warsaw Pact invaded and attacked, our forces. But in this situation, if the Russians shot off the other thing about it, there's three ways they can do it.
That was too. A major disaster averted by the Cuban Missile Crisis because realistically, these small weapons that were present on the island could have been fired and could have immediately reached 5,000 Marines. I mean,
well, it's worse than that. They would have killed 100,000 Marines.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have killed the invasion force. We were going to do that was the plan. We would have an amphibious invasion force, 100,000 people, and there's a document. The day or two after the Cuban Missile Crisis is over,
right,
where this is referred to, and Kennedy asked for, or McNamara does it on his behest, asked the Joint Chiefs of Staff, what's the casualty estimate of the invasion force? And it says, tens of thousands of people, 30,000 or something, but the 100,000, if they have these devices operable and use them, which they did, and they were going to. If we invaded, we know that now.
Well, and that's the thing, is that 10,000, 5,000, 20,000, 30,000 dead Marines, it's irrelevant because once that happens, there you go. You have an almost automatic response where, okay, they've now used weapons on our soldiers. We now have to respond. Right? I mean,
no, I don't think that means, I mean, we would be invading them. We would be invading Cuba and, an amphibious, like a D-Day style invasion. The idea that what I was speaking of where we would use them if they invaded us in Europe.
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's another issue about invasion. But what I'm saying is that once they were used on U.S. troops, though, didn't that open it up? Wasn't that?
It's like, those are Cubans though. I mean, if we invade them and they shoot us, that's just like Vietnam. We had plenty of troops in Vietnam and Korea die.
Well, there were people arguing that we should use nuclear weapons in Vietnam.
Sure,
as well.
They were.
So
sure they were.
I'm just saying that.
It was discussed too by General Westmoreland.
Right.
When Quezon was under siege.
Right.
That something, I don't know, I didn't know that until a few years ago.
Right.
And I've read a lot of stuff about Vietnam. But, I'm kind of losing my, there's something I was going to tell you.
Well, we were going to get into more.
One thing you may not know. So there's basically, and I'm trying to remember them all, but three scenarios that they're talking that the Russians would actually use one of these weapons. And that one scenario is a simple demonstration, like they shoot it into, was it the Baltic Sea or something? What's the ocean right there?
We have the Black Sea is right there.
The Black Sea, yeah. They just somehow shoot it off into the, above the Black Sea or something.
Right.
And another one was they would shoot sort of defensively, which is kind of what these things are designed, in theory, what they're supposed to be for. Defensively meaning, at Ukrainian military attacking them, like if they declare they're going to declare they own these provinces, and then if Ukraine invades them later on, then they would use them.
Right.
The other way, though, is they would nuke one of the cities.
Cripple it, just remove it from the equation. I don't know if they would take out the capital, but a significant city.
Yeah.
Right? And here you go. But do we know any of this, though? I mean, we know about the basic ideas of strategy from before, but again, do we know what the actual doctrine is outside of what Putin has said publicly? Right? And now we've
I think they're getting these ideas from, you know, the Russian, you know, military papers and so forth. I mean, like your whole question, we're just talking about, we don't know what the U.S. will do. I mean, we could probably research it and figure out what are in the, what the different papers are and read them and, you know, that the Air Force Academy's got and figure it out. But, I mean, it's the information's out there somewhere, I'm sure. Thing I want to tell you about, there's two little things I want to tell you and just let you see what you got to say, but.
Sure.
I think, Americans are complete denial of this possibility. You know, everyone tells two little stories. One, I was speaking with someone about, I was starting, you know, this was in, grew in the back of my head maybe 6 weeks ago, that this was an increasing possibility because Russia was taking more losses on the battlefield, and here we are. And I said this to a friend of mine, and he's younger than me, like 35 or something, and he just said, oh, that'll never happen. It would take a madman to do something like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, someone completely insane. He can't imagine in his head, such a scenario, but that, sadly, you know, it's not an insane person, that does something like that. And I know that from reading these historical documents. And the way I would think of it, I was thinking about this and mentioned it, it'd be like, you know, I actually said this to you last week. The analogy is these nuclear weapons are really like a shotgun. Mm-hmm. And the United States, in the Russians for that matter, but the United States has had a shotgun on the whole world, with our, the implied threat of us having all these things, and we threatened to use them during the Cuban Missile Crisis and during the Korean War. There's probably other times slipping my, you know, that it happened, but during the Taiwan Straits Crisis.
Right.
But they also are what enabled us to go to war in Vietnam. It's they're without China coming on down, the first couple, you know, they're what enabled us to go to war in Iraq, to invade Panama. Actions.
I get it, because what has happened here is that effectively, because we had that sort of threat, that means that we could always escalate to it, and therefore we have that threat capability. Whether we ever use it or not is irrelevant, which is much like in the reverse. Yeah, how many other nations have become nuclear states now? You know, Pakistan, which, you know, didn't even exist at the time that we, you know, as a nation state, did not exist when we first, you know, bombed Hiroshima, stuff like this. You have various other nations. I mean, China, as you said before, they had, like, no nuclear weapons. I would dare say today they do.
They do. A limited number.
Oh yeah, it doesn't
so
mean,
far.
But it doesn't have to be a lot, does it?
No.
You know.
But the thing about these weapons is they're like I said, they're like shotguns. You know, if someone goes and robs the convenience store and they walk in there with a shotgun, they don't want to use it. You know, they don't want to shoot the person, because if they do, then they may go to jail. They're going to get more in trouble. Most likely they're going to get in big trouble. But it happens. You know, there are times people rob convenience stores and they kill somebody. And that's the thing.
It's an old rule of the street, basically. Look, there's only so many times you're going to be able to wave a gun around before at some point it's going to get fired. Okay.
So, the danger, like, I didn't, I just, I didn't try to explain this all to this friend of mine, but
yeah,
I'm doing it now. But the danger is not that there's a madman that's going to, you know, start a nuclear war to destroy the world. The danger is the weapons themselves.
Right.
That as long as they exist, the more times they're brandished, the greater the odds that one day they will be used, and or an accident will happen.
Well, see, now it almost sounds like you must have done a Freedom of Information Act request on my letter to President Reagan when I was 12, which got me an FBI file open, because that is effectively what I said to him, okay, which is that there are only so many times that this can be a you know, this is me at 12, right? There's only so many times that this is going to be a threat. Whereas eventually, either by accident, by poor planning, or by mistake, you know, there's lots of different ways you can go here. These things will get used. And I don't think anybody in the long run is going to benefit from that. And that's effectively what I wrote to the president at 12. You know, again, it made me some sort of subversive and all that, but okay. But, yeah, I mean, that's where I was at with it. And you would think that every generation which would come after us during that time period, again, we talked about this, you know, the idea of the threat of a global event like this was certainly present in people's minds at the height of the Cold War, was certainly present in people's minds in the 1980s. You know, it didn't quite come back into vogue, so to speak, in the 2000s, did it?
No.
But it seems to be around now, and the weird thing is, you and I are experiencing people that just think of it as, oh, that's just comic book fantasy, practically, you know?
Yeah. We grew up with it. These people, like the guy I was talking with, did not. Now, I talked to someone today about this topic, and someone I was eating lunch with, this guy's older than me. He's in his 70s.
Right.
And he said, well, I'm not worried about it because I don't think they have them. He said, they're losing the war. They don't have good weapons. And I just think their nuclear weapons probably don't even work.
See, there's the other thing, right? The other fallacy that comes into play where, and that went back and forth and slid back and forth all during the time of the Cold War too, where there were points at which they were overestimated. Oh, they must have hundreds of these things. They had like, you know, a dozen, right? At a certain point, I mean, you remember when it was so drastically, we find out many years later that they had drastically overestimated what the Soviet Union had when it came to hardware. Right?
I want to talk about that too.
Sure.
That point. But so real quick, I watched or listened to an interview Stanley Kubrick did in the 60s about Dr. Strangelove.
Right.
And in it he's talking about what's the risk of nuclear war. And he said one thing that increases the risk is simply that we don't think about it and that we have we just psychologically deny it because it represents our own death. You know, you don't walk around thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And the two discussions I had with these two people, that's what they're doing. The first guy may simply not have much, he doesn't have much knowledge about it, didn't grow up with as we did, you know, with it being more out there as a possibility. So that's more understandable, but it's still a denial, mm-hmm. The other guy, I just thought, this guy's a complete psychological denial.
See, but it leads to a stranger question.
It's just unrealistic to think they don't.
Yeah, it's unrealistic, but we have now witnessed a time in which, though, people have been in denial about a great many things. You know, they believe that their politician is a great savior, so they deny any of their past.
This is more and more of a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, it's a greater, so here's the thing about this, and here's a bizarre, hypothetical question I'm gonna throw at you. And so, you know, brace yourself, but let's just say, there was a limited exchange of nuclear weapons. What are the chances that there wouldn't be a significant portion of the population that even with evidence presented to them that this happened, that they would say, oh, well, that can't really be what it is? because there are people that have made statements about these chemical weapons. They've said, oh, they were used, they weren't used, maybe they were, maybe it was sarin gas, maybe it was, you know, just chlorine, maybe it was mustard gas. People draw their own conclusions, and it leads to a lot of this stuff disappearing. I mean, you know, how many times did we have to hear about, well, this guy's gassing his own people, and then we find out, you know, Hussein's gassing the Kurds, first of all. You know, when it comes to other situations, it's distorted and very weird, and there are people that just, no matter what you present to them, will say, it's a phony, it's a fake, it's not real. So I think that even if it happened, it wouldn't be the kind of thing that would strike terror immediately in the hearts of a significant portion of the population, because they would remain in an even deeper denial, regardless of, even if these things went live, if it happened. What do you think about that?
Well, because it doesn't directly affect them, yeah. I mean, I got an email from someone living in Russia.
Right.
I actually sent this to the guy that's been on your show.
Yeah.
But this person really is in Russia. And I'm just going to translate it into complete English. It's a little, you know, that the English isn't perfect. But I emailed this person. It says, looks like the situation is, this was an email from last week. It looks like the situation is getting more serious in Russia with official annexations, mobilization announcement coming. And this guy replies and he says, absolutely. And he says, the dictator discovered that all efforts he put in the game are wrong and based on distorted information. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with the dictator. And he says, people in Russia, I'm in Moscow right now, still don't realize the situation. The war is not in the house. It's on the TV and is being consumed like a kind of show. Once the family receives the call to send the son in war, the tune could fastly change and prevent such social discontent. The powers have imposed new restricting laws. Another part of society, people who are in opposition are scared to openly fight with the power, or at least say, no, what you doing? The repressions are widening. The power is tearing society apart.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that most people are just in denial, you know, they're just in denial, have been in denial watching it on TV.
But how super valid is his point about how if the war is on TV as opposed to in these people's homes, they will continue to ignore it and deny it? See, you and I had this discussion.
Well, life has to go on to a certain extent.
Well, of course. But you and I had this discussion many times about Afghanistan. Why is this going on so long? My argument was because there was not enough body bags coming home. See, there wasn't enough to move people to really pay attention. Like, is there even a war anymore? Right? And I think that is because of the extreme controls on the information.
That is
precisely the position that many Russians would find themselves in, because they're not being told that, you know, that this conflict is going a certain way. They're not being told that, you know, maybe.
Well, that's also a good reason to believe that they're not going to use nuclear weapons, because.
But is it? Yeah, okay.
This email is, I mean, I've read what he's writing me. I've read in stories that supposedly this is what Russia is like now. But, you know, the whole thing is that supposedly in Russia, the people, they have, you know, they, for what little power we have, voting or whatever, they have almost none.
Right.
And they've made, there's an implicit deal, like, for the Russian people, don't get involved, and we'll leave you alone. And here they start a war. And they have, you know, not done a full mobilization and tried to limit the impact of the war on the Russian citizens. So if they do a complete mobilization, a complete draft.
Well, then it will affect them.
Then it will affect them. And then if they use nuclear weapons, you know, it'll really affect, you know, it's the more it affects them, the less the grip on the more of a possibility that Putin will lose power. I mean, I don't think there's any possibility now.
Right.
But it is possible that his government could be destabilized by the conflict. I mean, that's what happened in the Russian Revolution, you know. So it is possible. It's not
not likely.
I don't think it's anywhere as likely as some people you see in the United States claiming that's going to happen. And they were since the war started. You know, he's just going to fall. You know, that's just fantasy talk.
Yeah, I think that's been the major problem, is that there are people that are commentators in the West that make it sound as if, oh, this could be the no way. Not immediately. There's no way, unless it really comes home to a lot of people in Russia. And I mean, a significant portion of the population would have to be affected. I mean, why is it that there was finally an uprising against, you know, the situation in Vietnam? Too many families were affected. You know, if they had kept it down to the levels, again, Afghanistan, longer conflict, way fewer casualties.
And one thing about this Russian thing, there's a story, is like 1,500 or 5,000 people were arrested today for demonstrating.
Right.
But I saw that most of these people that were arrested, now they've been drafted. So that that would kind of make you not demonstrate, you know?
Well, they also use the word conscription.
Yeah.
And the
conscript. Yeah, that's the right word.
And
not drafted.
Yeah, and when you're conscripted, it's a little different. I mean, that's basically you have no choice. You have now been put into the military. You know, a draft, you might be able to make efforts to resist. When you're conscripted, that's the end of the story.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, so,
imagine if they did that in the Vietnam War. Well, they couldn't do that. But,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how that would have went, but I guarantee
it
wouldn't
have went. It'd be so crazy.
It would not have went well. If they, hey, protesters, you're now conscripted. You're now going into, I don't think that would have went well at all. But can they get away with it in Russia? I don't know. Can they get away with the use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine? I don't know. I gotta be honest with you. I don't know. And I don't know if the reaction from this side of the, world would be significant. I don't know what it would be. It's very, very strange.
I'm doubtful that the United States would use some. In that scenario, but
no, look,
but it doesn't matter. Even if we didn't, it increases the risk that they will be, you know,
of course. And look, I'm not spoiling for it. I don't want to see it. I doubt that, the U.S. would engage in that right away, without, you know, without a lot of provocation.
Well, another scenario though, that I heard like 2 weeks ago, or read about. It was that supposedly in Russia, a lot of the news programs were advocating, just doing mass bombing, inside Ukraine of civilians, cities or whatever, infrastructure. And just, I mean, they were saying turn the whole place into rubble, things like that. So I would actually think that's more likely that they would do that with artillery too.
Yeah, Putin's version of Nixon's madman theory, right?
Yeah, that's more likely than that they would go straight to using the a tactical nuclear weapon, that we would do like what Nixon tried to do.
Right,
and it failed. I mean, one of the big lies that is told about the Vietnam War is that when Nixon was president, the bombing worked. He did this Christmas bombing, and then soon afterwards, within a few months, we signed the Nixon signed the treaty with them.
Right, right.
Which basically was that we're getting out and give us a couple, don't invade for a couple, don't take it all over for a couple of years. That's what happened. But the lie is that the bombing worked. We could have kept bombing and so forth. The reality is that Christmas bombing campaign, 4 to 6 weeks of all these B-52 bombers going in there, dozens of B-52 bombers were shot down.
Right.
And the world, you know, was, it caused the world, you know, people, not just in the United States, but world outrage. Mm-hmm. But it's more that all these airplanes are getting shot down. So it wasn't a sustainable air campaign either.
Right.
So, yeah, it's
no, the whole thing was a mess, and nothing was as advertised. Anyway,
nah.
Mike, I know I've kept you a little over time here, but I want to give you a chance to put a final word on this or whatever it is you want to do here, because you know we are after 9 o'clock already, and that's past your time. But you know, whatever it is you want to add in, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, I just, for the last few minutes, throw in the China thing out there, and that is that while Putin is making these threats, on Sunday, Biden basically said he would defend Taiwan with U.S. military forces. And that's a pretty bellicose statement, too.
Right.
Which I don't really know what the purpose of it is. So we're seeing an escalation in the past week of tensions and, you know, with Putin and over Taiwan.
Yeah, no, it has been a strange time of increased tensions. Are we looking at, you know, people have been talking about Cold War 2.0 and this is, you know, and very much saying that, look, the United States is just being the big bully on the planet, and finally Putin is saying something back to them, you know. I don't buy that. I think Putin is out for himself, as per usual, and he definitely has his ideas about the way he would like to see the Russian Empire reconstituted. And that's just the way it is. And meanwhile, we have the American Empire, but it almost appears a little rudderless when, you know, you want to make strong statements, but then when it comes to, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to do something. I'm telling you, it's going to be big. I don't know. When people talk like that, I don't take them very seriously. I'm curious as to whether, you know, I know what our media is telling us about this, how it's being received, etc. But I don't know how serious it is. And meanwhile, you know, what about the Chinese, you know, issues with the economic equation, right? What about that? How is that all playing out as we're looking at this, you know, increased tension and, oh, we have near misses and there are tensions between naval assets in the South China Sea, et cetera, et cetera. This is a whole grand map of stuff that can open up and become really nasty and problematic, either in the real world or in an actual new level of Cold War. And I've got to tell you, I normally would say that I could sort of predict what's coming next and so on and so forth. And very predictably, they brought out, you know, hey, let's pay attention to Iran once again, right? Because, I mean, you know, making an issue because, this woman, you know, with the whole thing with the headdress and Christiane Amanpour, as soon as I see her going anywhere, I know there's something about to happen. You know, she's trying to get
an
interview.
Well, that's the frustrating thing, yeah, of, you know, about all this too.
Right.
Is that the United States doesn't negotiate anything. And, you know, why in the world did we advance NATO as, you know, after the Cold War like this?
Right.
When Reagan was president, and Bush was president, we told them we wouldn't.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's proven. That's been released. That information was, the documents that proved that were released by Germany a few months ago in the lead up to this war. So right. Why did we keep doing that? Why do we keep, threatened Russian security? Doesn't justify him invading Ukraine, but there was never any deal. Why didn't we do nuclear arms deals with Russia? Why did Trump abandon those treaties? And, you know, why are we, you know, increasing tensions in Taiwan? You know, why'd Pelosi fly over there? Why'd Biden make these statements? Cause when you do these things, it causes the other side to react.
Well, yeah, why the sudden issues?
So where's the move to get out of this mess? How's someone's got to end this war in Ukraine somehow. Can't just go on forever.
Right. And that's the thing is that, you know, there's a lack of coherence. And every time an administration changes and the pendulum switches in this country, it appears as though, well, we've got a new philosophy. And, you know, those countries that kind of say we're not very trustworthy because we, you know, don't necessarily stay the course with them one way or another, whether we're their ally or their adversary. It's starting to sound like they have a point, Mike. I mean, am I right or wrong?
No, that's why I started reacting that way when you talk about Iran, because that's something that, you know, we broke that deal, you know, in Korea. So, you know, they haven't had a nuclear weapons program.
Right, not yet.
So, I mean, the whole thing is, you know, the public reasons for this is not the real reasons.
Right, and given the need for intimidation and the use of the weapons for just the intimidation factor alone, can you blame a nation state for thinking to themselves, if we have nuclear weapons, at the very least it makes these larger nations think twice before, you know, they bring in Operation Ajax or they install somebody as a strongman because they decided to support this guy because he's, you know, the better off agent like they did for a little while with Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and then they decided he was no good, and then they balkanized and destroyed the place, and you don't know which way we're coming from. You know, it's like we have, you know, what do they call that, dissociative identity disorder? Every 4 years we have dissociative identity disorder. You don't know who you're dealing with. And can you blame some places for maybe feeling a little like, I can't quite trust the U.S.? I don't know. That's the attitude I take. I know a lot of people object to it, but truthfully, objectively, you know, how are you going to deal with this? We're in the deal. We're out of the deal. We want you to, we're going to back off. We're going to be rough. We're going to, you know, it's not our business. It is our business. You never know. Administration to administration. I'll tell you right now, as we have, you know, I know Trump calls him Sleepy Joe. Some people call him Slow Joe. But I got to tell you, our executive representative there, not doing us any favors if you want, I don't know, consistency, coherence in policy or something that has follow through. You know, strong statements and then don't worry, it's going to be real bad what it is I'm going to do if you don't back off of this terrible thing you're doing. I don't know. Plus, you know, the pandemic is over according to Biden, which, then why are you still trying to pass laws regarding the pandemic? I don't know. You know, lack of coherence. Anyway, Mike, anything you want to throw in on your way out the door?
Well, I think that sums it up for tonight. Hopefully nothing crazy happens between now and next week.
Well, you'll be with me next week, right?
Yeah, I'll be here.
All right, excellent. I look so forward to these because you never know. We could get into deep, you know, discussions about the current economic plight of everybody, or we could get into international policy, politics, and the presentation thereof. Historical discussions. You never know with author Mike Swanson. Again, the man behind WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com or check out his work, and that is his work as an author, The War State, and also Why the Vietnam War. Both books do I highly recommend. And Mike, thanks so much for doing this with me. Anyway, the Ocelli Effect is done for tonight. I will get back to you guys with the call-in show tomorrow, and it might be a couple special announcements, so keep listening to Ocelli.com Radio. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.